New Hampshire Now is about informed discussion with the leaders of our nation, state, and community. I'm Chris Ryan.
We're going to have a great time, Chris, and thank you very much. Your show is fantastic.
Great to talk to you, Chris. Thanks for having me.
I do think, although determination matters, I think support from people who believe in you matters even more.
I was living in a tent for 3 weeks. Very cold, very hard to try and get homework done. But I was determined to stay in school because, I mean, that was the only thing that was going to get me out of this situation regardless of where I am.
I get a chance to talk to your wife and I get to interview her, which I'm fixing to do and if next time I see her.
I do know that from spending a lot of time here in New Hampshire, the people in New Hampshire expect to meet you face to face.
And welcome to New Hampshire Now for the fourth day of December 2019. I am Chris Ryan. Appreciate you joining us for the program. This hour of the show is brought to you by New England College and NEC.edu, offering over 35 undergraduate programs, graduate programs as well, including clinical mental health counseling. I encourage you to check out NEC.edu for more information. We have a packed edition of the New Hampshire Now program today. Of course, the big news in regards to the First in the Nation presidential primary and Democratic nominating contest, Kamala Harris dropped out of the race yesterday. We'll get reaction in regards to that from Andrew Yang in just a moment here on the program. As I said before, Kamala Harris's chances of the nomination were pretty much doomed when she announced she was, in essence, foregoing the First Nation presidential primary. There were a number of reports which indicated difficulty with staff. And let's be honest, I mean, this was a dramatic fall for Kamala Harris, who was one of the individuals, in my view, that looked like she had a good shot at putting together a campaign to win the nomination based upon her political acumen, her intellect, and it just seemed like she may have been the right candidate for this time. But there were a number of strategic blunders which led to the demise of her campaign. And, I saw her initially as kind of the Marco Rubio of this race, trying to figure out exactly where to fit into things politically and trying to be everything to everybody. But in actuality, she ended up being more like the Scott Walker of this race, so she didn't even make it to voting. We'll talk about that a lot here on the program today. Why don't you know this hour is also presented by the Prescription Center, where the health of you and your family comes first. Two great locations, one on the Concord Hospital campus, the other 125 North Main Street. The Prescription Center will also deliver prescriptions to you free of charge. It's the Prescription Center, where the health of you and your family comes first. And the Hampshire Now program, as always, proudly presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council. New Hampshire's colleges and universities are the backbone of our state's economy and provide tremendous learning opportunities for all Granite Staters. I encourage you to check out visit nhcolleges.com for more information. Coming up in just a moment on the program, Andrew Yang. But first, want to let you know that New Hampshire primary interviews on the program presented by Rath Young and Pignatelli, a national impact that's uniquely New Hampshire. For information, check out rathlaw.com. Joined by Andrew Yang, I want to start off with Kamala Harris leaving the presidential contest and your takeaways on that, and then we'll get kind of into the broader dialogue about what that means with her leaving while so many other candidates who are anti-quote-unquote establishment and continue on as you are.
People underestimate the humanity of running for president. I have been with Kamala over a dozen times, not just at debates, but in town halls and meetings in the early states, and I'm going to miss seeing her on the trail. I'm stunned that she's suspending her campaign, but we'll hear from Kamala again, and I expect she and I will be working together in D.C. before too long.
We talked about this the other day, and one of the major dynamics we've seen in this campaign is that anything that is establishment or in some way can be seen as establishment. She was the district attorney in California, worked away obviously to become a United States senator, was running a left of center type of campaign. Those individuals seem to be falling by the wayside, while yourself, Pete Buttigieg, Bernie Sanders is kind of an insider, and he's been in government for so long, but has seemed as an outsider. That seems to be a big theme, where you're opening a new office here, you've raised $2 million, and you began this race along with Buttigieg as the longest of long shots.
Yeah, we raised $2 million in just a week, and we're growing while other campaigns are shrinking because many people here in New Hampshire realize that our government is decades behind the curve, it's not solving our problems, and we need a new way forward. Unfortunately, that new way forward is unlikely to come from Washington, D.C. itself. It's going to come from people outside of D.C., and the people in New Hampshire know that.
Do you feel that Bernie and Elizabeth Warren, despite Elizabeth Warren fighting against Wall Street for many years and proposing various things that are certainly populist, and Bernie Sanders, who have obviously has championed many progressive issues for many years, do you feel that they're also kind of tainted by D.C. and the fact that they have not been able to bring about the type of change that they've advocated for?
Well, I certainly wouldn't take it that far, but I do think that it's going to be difficult to get things done in Washington after the election, and it's going to take someone who can bring people together from both sides of the aisle, who's drawing in independents and disaffected Trump voters and Republicans that just wants to propose solutions that will improve our way of life, and I believe I'm that candidate.
Here in December on the program, we're focusing on foreign policy with the candidates because I feel like that has not really been discussed near as much. And how would you frame your vision in regards to your role as Commander-in-Chief and America's role in the world?
Well, it was James Mattis that said that if you invest more in diplomats, you have to spend less on ammunition. And that's where I am. I've signed a pledge to end the forever wars. We need to reinvest in and rebuild our partnerships and alliances and let our longstanding allies know that America is back and we're here for good.
How would you go about negotiating with individuals like a Kim Jong-un or a Vladimir Putin? Because to me, one of the major fallacies, if you will, of the Trump presidency is how he has devalued this country and put us side by side, flagged side by side with many individuals where it feels that the American flag should not be in North Korea or in Russia. How would you go about determining the power of the presidency and who you go about negotiating with and how?
Well, to me, the mistake is not sitting down with leaders that we have dramatic disagreements with. The problem is sitting down with them and getting nothing in return. That's not the way to accomplish America's goals and further our national interest abroad. So we have to have clear goals for every interaction and negotiation. And if we're going to sit down with leaders, we have to know that we're going to get something significant out of it.
Would you have preconditions in regards to meeting with any individual?
Well, to me, that's the job of your State Department and diplomatic staff, to have a whole series of meetings that culminate in the meeting that's actually going to seal a deal and get something done. You don't have the exploratory meeting between the two heads of state.
Mikhail Gorbachev talked the other day about the difficulty and challenges of the Russia-United States relationship and where that relationship could be headed, and he had concern in regards to that. How do you view our relationship from an economic perspective with Russia and what should take place with the sanctions, but also their level of interference that we have seen and that has been clearly indicated by our intelligence officials? How do you go about dealing with Vladimir Putin, and what has Trump done wrong in that realm?
Russia is not a true economic rival to us, but it has been a geopolitical rival and threat because of its undermining of our democracy. They have found a vulnerability in our system, and they're exploiting it to its maximal extent. So what we have to do is be realistic about who we're competing with on what grounds. The economic rival is China. Mm-hmm. The geopolitical rival is Russia. You approach them in different ways, but geopolitically, the way forward is to try to isolate Russia, build an international consensus with different partners and allies to try and show Russia that continuing to try and undermine our democracy is going to have significant consequences that they do not want on their heads.
Obviously, you mentioned China and the fact that they have made leaps and bounds in regards to their economy. They continue to grow. They continue to be focused on that in a very singular and impressive type of fashion, while we have been focused on a lot of other different things in our country and slow and reacting. How should the United States work with China? What have you liked or not liked in regards to how the president has dealt with it? I think that obviously trade deals need to be renegotiated, but I think we're getting back to the conditions upon meeting individuals, where if you're going to have a renegotiation, you need to have an end plan and how you are a strategy for how you're going to renegotiate.
What's really disheartening, Chris, is it seems like the ultimate outcome of all of this trade war with China is going to be point A, like where we were in the first place.
But with higher cost.
But with higher costs, and there's been massive economic harm. to American farms and businesses around the country. So to me, the path forward with China is to, again, rebuild an international set of norms that helps bring China to the table and gets real concessions out of them. Doing it unilaterally is not the ideal. The best way forward to me is to build a WTO for data, build international standards around data and technology, mm-hmm. and then let China know, just like they had to conform to international standards to join the WTO, they would have to do the same thing if they want their data and technology to interoperate with other societies. The rest of the world is much, much bigger than China alone, and if we take advantage of that, we can get real concessions.
Final thing, do you see a particular either foreign policy or economic realm that is not being discussed enough? Because we go to, you know, Syria and North Korea, Russia, China, in terms of geopolitical and economic foes. But looking into Central, South America, do you see anything that that jumps out at you in regards to there being opportunity or challenges that are confronting the United States with geopolitical and economic issues?
Well, we should do our best to keep the countries in Central and South America stable and secure, because to the extent that they have instability, migrant crises can bring people right to our borders. So that's something that's of constant concern to us. But I do believe the bigger problems are the ones that we're talking about with Iran and Russia and China. I'm particularly concerned that China is set to leapfrog us in artificial intelligence, which is one of the foremost technologies of this era. They have more access to more data than we do, which is like food for artificial intelligence. I have sat with our technology leaders in Silicon Valley. They're concerned too. And as president, I will be a partner to our leading technology companies to make sure we maintain global leadership.
Andrew, it's always great to see you.
You too, Chris. Happy New Year. New Year's Eve, Yang Gang style, here in New Hampshire. Check it out. Join us. It's going to be a blast.
All right, that is Andrew Yang right there as we sat down before he opened up his field office in Manchester. Joining us right now on the program, New Hampshire Now political reporter Braden Itarondo, who was with Andrew Yang at Colby Sawyer College, which was his stop just prior to coming down to Manchester. Braden, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. Appreciate joining us for the show. What were your takeaways from Yang's remarks at Colby Sawyer College?
Well, first off, regardless of the storm conditions, it was actually a decent crowd of about 80 people, 40% of which were actually students, which is a higher number than some of the other candidates. So Andrew Yang, he did a lot of establishing who he is and trying to appeal to the New Hampshire audience. He talked a lot about how he started as a lawyer, how he went to school in New Hampshire, and then how he was a failed businessman for a time. And then he went into, from there, into his policies on the economy. He talked about how Washington, D.C. doesn't care about the economy and how it's a town of followers, not leaders. And so he said that he wants to rewrite the rules of the economy to ensure that big corporations pay taxes and give it back to the people. For this, obviously, he wants to set a minimum income level of $1,000 a month, where people would be eligible starting at 18 years old. He said that J.P. Morgan's CEO has proposed a similar negative income tax to his, which would show that, you know, it's not a unique idea only to him, and that other people have also thought about the same thing. He also talked about the GDP and how it's not an accurate way to gauge the economy, and how he wants, if he becomes president, he wants to implement more efficient systems so that we can actually get a grasp of what the state of our country is. He talked about how data and tech are the oil of the 21st century and said that he wants to create new world trade systems for data, and this would help with combating piracy in China. He touched upon gun violence briefly, saying how gun violence won't be solved with regulations, but regulations can help. He talked about the never-ending, the forever wars. And he quoted James Madison saying that the more you spend on diplomacy, the less you spend on ammunition. And so he really wants to focus on improving relations with our allies. After that, he talked about college, and he said that we, as of right now, we are overprescribing it, and that not everybody should go to college because we have a shortage of trade jobs, including plumbers and electricians, jobs that will be difficult to automate and that are safe for the near future.
Mm-hmm.
Because a big focus of his was to ease people's worries about the automation of truck drivers and things like that, Chris.
So a number of interesting things there. First off, I think, is in regards to the number of college students who were at the event. And what was interesting is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez came out against Yang's universal basic income. And she, of course, is a huge star in the Democratic left, but also a surrogate for Bernie Sanders. And one of Yang's strengths has been appealing to some of Bernie Sanders supporters, individuals who voted for Bernie perhaps in the New Hampshire primary in 2016. And I'm going to be interested to see what AOC does and what Sanders' campaign does in terms of trying to bring back those supporters, because Yang siphoning them off could be the difference between, you know, Bernie winning the primary here or finishing second or third or even fourth. So I thought AOC and the choice of Sanders' campaign, if in fact it was a choice, to go after Yang on universal basic income was interesting, and I think that she's going to continue to be a surrogate that looks to peel off the college age voters and individuals who voted for Sanders before and are now supporting Yang. Any other takeaways from the event?
Well, it was interesting with regards to the college student in the audience, because many of them were actually not too receptive of Andrew Yang at the beginning of his speech, but then towards the end seemed to have almost completely flipped, Chris.
That is interesting. Well, Braden, appreciate your time. Look forward to talking again soon.
Thank you.
Braden Arondo, New Hampshire Now political reporter, joining us here on the New Hampshire Now show. I am Chris Ryan. That segment of the show presented by Rath Young and Pignatelli and RathLaw.com. And this hour of the program brought to you by New England College as well as Prescription Center. We'll come back with Tom Rath after this.
You're listening to New Hampshire Now with Chris Ryan, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council.